Hi, I'm Dave Radlauer. Thanks for joining me for this portrait of an extraordinary pioneering woman of jazz, Barbara Dane. Barbara Dane has a gutsy sound, an enormous voice, and a great feeling for the blues. While her classic blues style is reminiscent of Bessie Smith and Ma Rainey, it's also fresh and distinctly personal. In this hour, we'll share in her memories of an eclectic life, singing with some of the greatest names in jazz and blues music, sampling four decades of performances, ranging from the Firehouse Five in the 50s to Lightnin' Hopkins in the 60s to a broadcast she made in Estonia in the 80s. Welcome to Barbara Dane, A Life in Song.
I see it all day, I hear it all night. Half the people gotta hustle, and the rest wanna fight. When I pick up the paper to look at the news, every headline hollers murder, yonder come the blues. Some folks don't have to worry, blues holds on all right. Some folks lie down and suffer, weep and cry all night. When I get a letter, I always look for good news. But every time I see the mailman, well, yonder come the blues. Many, many a day, just trying to keep from trying to throw myself away. I walk and I walk till I wear out my shoes. Just when I can't walk no further, yonder come the blues. Something else beside these blues all day. I've been mistreated and I've been misused, and every time I want some loving, what? Yonder come the blues. Make you sad, and some will make you mad. But the kind of blues I got, the worst I ever had. I feel disgusted and all confused. Nothing left to do but sing 'em. Yonder come the blues.
There was no use of me being a fool.
Oh, let me tell you what I've done. I gave him all my money just to have some fun. He told me that he loved me so. If I'd marry him, I need not work no more. Now I'm grieving, almost dying, just because I didn't know he was lying. Oh, I've got the blues. I've got the blues. Well, I've got those. Oh, misery blue. No more, Daddy, he's done left town. Goodbye, dearie, you used to be so cheery. Well, so long, honey, took all my money. I worry, worry so.
At that time, there was this little place called the Blind Lemon. I was sitting on a little stool singing songs and things, and Dick Oxtop came in and listened, and afterward he says, you know, I like all the things you do, but the thing is, what you really do best is the blues and the spirituals. You should concentrate on that more now. That would really be good. And why don't you come down, and I have a band that's playing down the street here on such and such nights and at the Larks Club. So it turned out that was Bob Mielke's Bearcats.
1954-55.
That's right.
Dick brought you into a new music scene and it opened new opportunities for you.
Well, it opened a whole new... I'd always been yearning for some kind of musical companionship. At that point, I'd always sung by myself in the sort of folk music circles. But they mostly were into being folkies, and I wasn't into being a folkie. I don't know what I had in mind. But I was yearning for companionship musically, and when I got up there with the band, I said, whoa, hey, this is... This is more like it. Tin Angel was a really good venue down there on Embarcadero with Turk Murphy played there a long time, and various bands would come from out of town. Kid Ory came regularly, and George Lewis. But I used to sit in there a whole lot. As soon as I got, you know, the people knew what I could do and all that, and everybody, every band is always, if you can cut the mustard, you know, is always open to having somebody get up and do a little something, as long as you don't impose too heavily on their good graces. And so I learned a lot by doing that. I learned a tremendous amount by sitting in, because it was the only school I had, basically.
All day long I worry. All day long I am blue. I'm so awfully lonesome. I don't know what to do. So I ask you, doctor, see if you can find something in your satchel to pacify my mind. Oh, doctor, doctor, write me a prescription for the blues. Those mean old blues. Let me tell you, doctor, why I'm in misery. Once I had a lover, he went away from me. Now I've been to see that gypsy, the hoodoo doctor too. They just shook their heads and told me there was nothing they could do. So doctor, doctor, write me a prescription for the blues. Those sweet old blues.
I seemed to pop in and out of it, and I was always interested in a whole variety of other things and doing other, living other lives, raising my children. I produced records for a long time of a whole different sort. I did all this traveling on behalf of the peace movement and civil rights movement and so on, and traveling around and singing in different countries and all kinds of things. But when it comes down to recording, the few things I did record, I had a chance to record with marvelous, marvelous musicians, some of the very best ones.
Like a baby, all day long I cry. And if you don't cure me, guess I will croak and die. Oh, give me something, doctor, will you, doctor, please? And then I'll sign the paper that I died of heart's disease. Oh, doctor, oh, doctor, write me a prescription for the blues.
We've been hearing from Barbara in her 1957 album, Trouble in Mind, with the legendary P.T. Stanton on trumpet, Bob Mielke trombone, Darnell Howard clarinet, Pops Foster bass, and Don Ewell piano. We'll be hearing quite a bit more music and a fascinating discussion with Miss Barbara Dane. So now, 1959 was an eventful year. You were on this Timex special with Louis Armstrong?
Yes, yes. And the way I hooked up with Louis was that I was in New York at the time, but I was booked to play the Pasadena Playhouse, a concert with the Firehouse Five, to sing with them, and Louis was the other half of the star half of the bill. So that's how he heard me. Invited me to make a tour in Europe with him. And of course, this is would have been the pinnacle of any singer's career, to hook up with Louis and do something like that. Now, that didn't happen. It's been a matter of a lot of conjecture why it didn't happen. My own feeling, I can't prove this. Well, let me first say what happened. The Glazer office, in preparation for having me go on the tour, had brought me to New York, had booked the Timex special, and I was written up in Time magazine around that time, and there's a quote from Louis saying, "Did you get that chick? She's a gasser." Now, I thought, I interpreted that as meaning that he was saying to Glazer that he ought to get that chick, you know, sign me up and stuff. And Glazer indeed was calling quite heavy and hot for a while there. And then it suddenly dropped away. I am conjecturing, and I'm pretty sure that what happened was the same as an incident where I was invited to make a State Department tour with Brownie McGee and Sonny Terry. Now, they were doing this because they liked to show the world, even though we're in the middle of all this turmoil in this country in terms of letting some of the other sections of the population get into the system, you know, have a piece of the pie. In other words, break down all these racial barriers. We're trying to tell the world by sending black and white artists out there that meanwhile can't record together, like I was saying earlier, out to different countries to demonstrate that there's no racial problem in this country. So they pulled me off the tour at the last minute of the Brownie and Sonny tour. The State Department simply wouldn't have me go because I'd been too involved with social activism in this country. And I'm presuming that that's what happened again this time. So it's very hard to actually prove what happened.
Most folks nowadays say old-fashioned ways should give way to things that are new. But somehow I hold to things that are old. Perhaps that's an old-fashioned view. I love my old books, the corners and nooks of my hometown and my old friends. Old memories, too. One love that is true, lasting through all life until it ends. I've got that old-fashioned love in my heart, and there it shall always remain. My love is like the ivy vine, clings a little closer all.
This is Barbara Dane from the late 50s with the Firehouse Five. And earlier we heard from her outstanding and now reissued Trouble in Mind disc, Misery Blues, and Prescription for the Blues. I'm Dave Radlauer. Thanks for joining me in getting better acquainted with this remarkable pioneering woman of jazz.
It'll never make any change.
Still ahead this hour, Barbara Dane with Lou Waters, with Lightnin' Hopkins, in a rare broadcast tape from Estonia, more about her unique life and song and Dane's ongoing commitment to social reform and radical politics. To further explore her eclectic background or to buy her CDs, you can contact Barbara Dane at www.barbaradane.net. That's barbaradane.net. Or to further explore the World Wide Web of Jazz online, you're invited to my website at www.jazzhot.bigstep.com. Here's Barbara Dane with blues legend Lightnin' Hopkins in the early 60s.
Well, you may. I had me all the time, never go my way. But Mother Earth is laying for you, that's a debt you gotta pay. I don't care how great you are, oh, I don't care how much you're worth. When it all ends up, you got to go back to. Horses, you may own a racetrack, have enough money, baby, to buy anything you like. Well, I don't care how great you are, and I don't care what you were. When it all ends up, we got to go right back to mother.
Gotta go back there.
I don't know how it happened that I was the one who was the first one who really started to build these bridges or to do the music and make
maybe
it.
Do you think this was perceived as a wedge into the mainstream culture? Mm-hmm. In other words, the fact that you were adopting this music?
Definitely was. That's exactly what it was seen as. A lot of the artists who I worked with, well, Memphis Slim and Willie Dixon were my backup band for a year because nothing was happening in Chicago. There was no work for them. And now, if you know anyone in the blues field, you ask about whose name is among the top names you'd ever remember would be Willie Dixon. Willie had to be sold to me by Memphis Slim. He said, well, I have this guy who's, a bass player who really needs the work a lot, and, he's really great. He did this, that, and the other. Well, I was so dumb about that kind of blues, the Chicago blues, that I didn't even know who he was talking about. And I hired him anyway, and turned out that it was wonderful. You know, they were my backup band for a year. We traveled around the country and played quite a few venues, but we never recorded together because they understood this as a wedge. They understood, okay, this is because these white audiences are starting to come to a club to hear what this girl's doing. That means there's a place for us in their pantheon, there in this, world of the folk music promoters and festivals and clubs. So they began to make their own records of their own stuff. And, of course, they don't need me for that, and that's fine, But I was a bridge. I was a bridge for a lot of those people. And I'm happy that I was able to provide that. That was really a lot of what got me interested in it in the first place, was this is great music, and yet my culture forecloses it.
Back and told us what's going on, old mother does, baby. You gonna turn back to Mother Dust one day. All you gotta do, live your life while she living. You can't live it while she gone away.
Speaking of folk and blues musics, you had an opportunity to work with Lightnin' Hopkins, one of the greats of that field.
Yes, he certainly is one of the greats of that field, one of the most inventive guitar players ever, and people are still trying to figure out how he did it. Lightning was in his own way a maverick and a guy who was struggling against some constraints, and he, grew up in Texas and lived, of course, in Houston and was a local a character besides the luminary in the blues field. But Lightning came to the Bay Area fairly often after a certain point when he'd gotten invited, I guess, to the folk festival maybe or something started bringing him here. He and I became acquainted in L.A., though, before that when John Lomax Jr. actually brought him there for something and trying to make him into a folky character. Well, Lightning, of course, had his own life and times way before that and was not Mr. Lomax's boy by any stretch of the imagination, but he had to sort of play that role during that visit because they were both trying to get how to get work. Folk music is what was happening. So Lightning and I knew each other from this, having met in the Ash Grove and all of the sharing bills together there. And so that's the way I got to work on a lot of bills with people like Reverend Gary Davis and Brownie McGee and Sonny Terry and Lightning. And after a while, a standard booking, it'd be me and one of those people because of there's a great difference between us, but there's also this bridge between us. I was up here living back in Berkeley, and Lightning was coming here because of having been invited to play at a place called the Cabal, I guess. He played there, and he played at the Folk Festival. And I'm told by good friends of his in the area that he had developed sort of a he took a shine to me, So he was trying to make an impression on me on a personal level. So he came by the house 2 or 3 times with his cousin driving him over, and then he would come in and he would sort of sit very formally in the living room and pass the time of day. And the way he thought, a young lady such as myself, it was all in his kind of make-believe world, really. But
it sounded like he had a bit of a southern gentleman to him.
Well, he was putting that foot forward. I just like to put this in because people think about him as sort of the baddest guy, with the shades on up and the stage unapproachable. You can't, he's mysterious and tough and he's not, he was never like that. He was a gentle, sweet guy, really. And just sitting, paying court in a sense, in the living room was the way he saw the thing.
So the actual circumstance of the album, though, was...
Well, the circumstances were that Chris Strachwitz at Arhuli had asked me to do an album, which never got finished, but I was leaving to live in New York. I'd fallen in love with someone who lived in New York, and I was about to go there. My dear companion of the last 30 years, Irwin Silber. So I was about to leave, and Strachwitz wanted to do this album and set it up. He set his equipment up in the Cabal down in San Pablo. Had me come in the afternoon to tape some songs, and we gathered together a few of our mutual friends. There was an audience in there, even though it was in the afternoon, the club wasn't open. So I was singing a whole bunch of stuff that Chris recorded and so on, and then, as a surprise, Lightning, because Lightning was in town, and Lightning had this thing, suit he was pressing toward me. So Lightning is there, and so at a certain point, Lightning and I start to just—he brings his guitar and hooks it up, and we just start jamming, which was not supposed to be recorded, really. But Chris was set up, and he was back in the shadows, and he just recorded it all.
When I said, "Can I
so,
go home with you?"
So, months later, after I've already moved to New York and everything, I get a call from Chris, and he says, "I'd like to put that stuff out that I recorded with Lightning. You know, you probably." would be nervous about it because it wasn't planned as a record, or you know, but it really has a quality to it that never gets onto records, which is of the artists just being people. Just what we were doing really was talking to each other through the medium of the songs, making up verses. You can be a little more risque or a little more forward or a little more whatever in a blues verse than you would in conversation, and so we were just having this whole little, you know, contretemps between us, and there it is on the record. So I really am very fond of this thing. The record's called Lightning Hopkins and Friends on Arhuli, and it's got, on one side, it's got him and with his cousin, I believe, in Texas, and the other side is with me here in Berkeley. So I want
beautiful. Let's listen.
Yeah.
You know, I come to your house. I come that eve. But what you had cooked for Lightning, do you know I had to eat it out in the streets? I don't feel that. Babe, I don't feel like you treat me right. Whoa, somebody must make you love them. That must happen overnight.
Well now, you know I'd like to see you every time you come to town, but you don't seem to be able to put your relatives down. I said now, oh Lightning, hey, 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 hey.
Fascinating bit of folk music history there. Barbara Dane with Lightning Hopkins, 1964. And Barbara wanted me to be sure and note that Chris Strachwitz deserves a lot of credit in those years for documenting, recording, and championing the folk and blues scene. He really documented many important artists in exceptionally high fidelity for the time. So congratulations on that, Chris.
When it all ends up, we got to go right back to mother.
Again, during her life in song, Barbara Daines worked with a wide range of music greats. Just a partial list of those she's performed with would include jazz, folk, and blues legends, Willie Dixon, Big Mama Thornton, Earl Hines, Jack Teagarden, Benny Carter, Art Hodes, Pete Seeger, Woody Guthrie, Sonny Terry, and Brownie McGee. I'm Dave Radlauer. Thanks for being with me to explore the fascinating life and times of this pioneering woman of jazz, a feature of the award-winning Jazz Rhythm. Promotional support is provided by the Mississippi Rag. Information on this monthly publication about legendary contemporary giants of traditional jazz and ragtime is at www.mississippirag.com. Here's Barbara from her newest CD she calls What Are You Gonna Do When There Ain't No Jazz? She's accompanied by Scott Black trumpet, Richard Hadlock soprano, Bob Milkey trombone, and Butch Thompson piano, singing Ma Rainey's Jelly Bean Blues.
Do you ever wait? break up with your good man on your mind. My daddy left this morning, that's why I moan and cry. Make you laugh, make you cry, drive those blues away. Sit right down, weep and moan. Then you finally say, I've been wondering where my jelly bean has gone. I could sit right down and moan a thousand miles away. And I just can't remember what my daddy had to say. He said, to lie.